We haven't achieved some of our objectives, and challenges have been growing faster than our collective response to it.
China trade on European leaders' minds. It's Tuesday, December 29th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. You'll find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, COVID worries surge, Taliban in Pakistan, Thailand's social and virus crises, a real estate boom, and moving the chess pieces. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Top European officials say the bloc must invest more heavily in Mediterranean countries to be able to compete with China. We have more in this report by Alfonso Beato in Barcelona, narrated by Henry Ridgewell.
Barcelona's port used to be owned by Spanish companies, but giant international companies have moved in. Part of this facility is now owned by Hutchison Ports, a Chinese company that operates a new semi-automated terminal. Catalina Grimol is a representative from the port of Barcelona. In the last 25 years, she says, many companies have been acquired by international companies, either Chinese-owned or Turkish, Russian or American. 25 years ago, the European Union helped set up the Union for the Mediterranean to boost its economic and political ties across the Mediterranean region. But the group, made up of 42 member states, is struggling against foreign competition, says the EU's foreign policy chief, Josep Borrell.
I have to say that the situation in our southern neighbourhood has in some aspects worsened. We haven't achieved some of our objectives, and challenges have been growing faster than our collective response to it.
Borrell says trade with North African countries has the potential to be four times greater than it is today, but a lack of coordination among member states has created an opening for powers like China and Russia to expand their influence across North Africa and Southern Europe. Again, Josep Borrell.
We must admit that we don't have enough resources coming from the national budgets. We need absolutely to develop private investment.
Beijing's multi-billion dollar Belt and Road Initiative to connect Asia, Africa and Europe has seen China establish shipping lines in the Mediterranean alongside submarine cables and 5G mobile networks. The digital infrastructure will shape the competition for 21st century technological dominance, and the EU will need greater financial firepower to compete, says analyst Eduard Martin Lineros.
In the case of Europe, we need the collaboration between private and public sector to get this investment, because if not, it will be very difficult to make a big deployment around the Europe.
China now has stakes in over a dozen European ports. Chinese investment has modernized facilities, but also triggered debate over Europe's ability to influence strategic interests in its own backyard. For Alfonso Beato in Barcelona, Henry Ridgewell, VOA News.
You'll find more on this story online by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. Stop by our Facebook page and visit the VOAnews.com website. These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on VOAnews.com. Bangladesh begins relocating second group of about 1,000 Rohingya refugees. Chinese citizen journalist jailed for 4 years for Wuhan virus reporting. China's central bank orders Ant Group to meet strict regulatory guidelines. How American pork could lead to wider U.S. trade deal with export powerhouse Taiwan. Banned from Sydney Harbor, New Year's fireworks show. Expanded coverage of these stories and much more are on Facebook at VOA Asia, as well as our VOAnews.com website. We continue with VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Health officials in the United States are worrying about a holiday surge of COVID-19 cases as vaccination efforts are continuing. Michelle Quinn reports.
Nearly 7 million people in the U.S. traveled by air in the week leading up to Christmas Day, down more than 70% from the prior year, but still the highest number since the pandemic began. Public health officials are worried that many people in the U.S. will give up in their efforts to fight the spread of the coronavirus, which causes the COVID-19 disease.
The important thing for people to understand is that even if you traveled, it doesn't mean you just throw your hands up in the air and say, oh, well. There are measures that you can take.
Among those measures, getting tested soon after traveling, says experts. The U.S. is requiring a negative coronavirus test for any travelers coming from Britain, where a more contagious mutation has been spreading. Such efforts are part of a multi-pronged campaign to stop the infection, health officials say.
Here's what the American people most need to know. Mitigation works. The science shows that it works.
A surge of cases in California and Arizona is offsetting some of the progress made in other parts of the nation to reduce new cases. Meanwhile, officials are getting vaccinated against the virus publicly, in part to send a message that the shots are safe and effective.
And then we need to engage with trusted influencers. We need to make sure our pastors and imams and rabbis, all of whom I'm working with, have the facts so that they can spread it to their congregants.
Normally, this is a time of year for people to come together. But because of the virus, this is a season of great concern and hope. Michelle Quinn, VOA News.
The World Health Organization is urging nations to prepare for inevitable future pandemics as it marks the first International Day of Epidemic Preparedness. We hear from Lisa Schlein for VOA in Geneva.
In a video statement to launch the International Day of Epidemic Preparedness, WHO Chief Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus warns nations against lurching from one outbreak to another while doing nothing to prepare and prevent this from happening. He calls this dangerously short-sighted.
If we fail to prepare, we're preparing to fail. Last year, the Global Preparedness Monitoring Board published its first report, which concluded the world remains dangerously unprepared for a global pandemic.
A year after being detected in Wuhan, China, the coronavirus has spread widely. The impact on the world's health and economic well-being has been devastating. Latest World Health Organization figures put the number of global infections at more than 80 million cases, including over 1.7 million deaths. Despite these grim statistics, the development of efficacious and safe vaccines is raising hopes the COVID-19 pandemic will be relegated to the history books in the coming months. While Tedros shares these hopes, he advises people to temper their optimism.
History tells us that this will not be the last pandemic, and epidemics are a fact of life. All countries must invest in preparedness capacities to prevent, detect, and mitigate emergencies of all kinds, whether they be natural occurring epidemics or deliberate events.
The WHO chief says the only way to defeat the current outbreak and prepare for the next is for all countries to work together in a spirit of solidarity. This, he adds, means involving and respecting the needs of all nations, rich and poor alike. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Happening now in Asia, China expressed anger after President Donald Trump signed into law measures to further bolster support for Taiwan and Tibet. The measures had been included in a $2.3 trillion pandemic aid and spending package. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Thanks for being with us today on VOA Asia. Afghanistan's foreign ministry has issued a statement expressing regret and concern on the activities of the Afghan Taliban political delegation in Pakistan. Several videos emerged over the last few days showing Taliban political office head Mullah Baradar and other members of the delegation meeting their followers, acknowledging the presence of their leadership in Pakistan, and at least in one video, meeting with Taliban fighters in uniform. Aisha Tanzim tells us more from Islamabad.
A cell phone video shows senior Taliban leader Mullah Abdul Ghani Baradar updating a Taliban cadre on peace negotiations with the Afghan government. The negotiations have been ongoing in Doha, Qatar, since September. Whatever we discuss in Doha, we share it with our leadership and the Ulama Council or Muslim clerical group here. They discuss it and give us their feedback, Baradar is telling the men around him. He arrived in Pakistan last week with a delegation to meet with senior officials, including Prime Minister Imran Khan. Last week, the Afghan government welcomed the visit as part of Pakistan's efforts to facilitate the Afghan peace process. That tone changed Friday. A new statement denounced the overt presence and activities of Taliban fighters and leadership in Pakistan. The Afghan Foreign Ministry urged Pakistan to close terrorist sanctuaries. When contacted, Pakistan's Foreign Office spokesman refused to comment. Afghanistan has often accused Pakistan of harboring the Taliban. Pakistan has maintained that it is trying to use its influence on the group to push it to negotiate with the Afghan government. In another portion of the video, the Taliban leader seemed to be giving a boastful pep talk to his followers, referring to a telephone conversation he had with U.S. President Donald Trump in March, he said, I cut the phone. He didn't cut the phone. He doesn't speak with anyone for more than 10 minutes, but he talked to us for a long time. And in the same video, he also claimed that U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo waited for the Taliban to arrive for a meeting in Doha last month and stood up in respect of them and only sat down when the Taliban sat down. In March, Trump described the phone call with Baradar as a good conversation. The State Department said Pompeo told the Taliban that the people of Afghanistan expect and deserve to live in peace and security after 40 years of war and bloodshed. Aisha Tanzim, VOA News, Islamabad.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see with links to find them easily. With VOA Asia, you can also follow radio program host VOA Stevenson and VOA Melman. VOA Asia Twitter. We're always online for you.
This news from VOA Asia. South Korea has confirmed its first cases of a more contagious coronavirus variant that was first identified in Britain. Japan barred entry of all non-resident foreign nationals as a precaution against the new coronavirus variant. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, Thailand contended with a double-headed crisis in 2020, an economy flatlined by the pandemic, and a youth-led pro-democracy movement demanding widespread reform to Thai society and its once untouchable monarchy. Wichra Duangadi reports for VOA from Bangkok.
Empty resorts, pristine beaches, and the bluest of seas. A private paradise greets visitors to Phuket, Thailand's Andaman island jewel. However, in a year lost to the pandemic, few have been able to get to here. Tourism makes up a fifth of the Thai economy, with visitors staying home. The island, like much of the kingdom, is facing economic ruin. Thailand is allowing visitors willing to enter a 14-day quarantine, but only thousands have taken up the offer so far, nowhere near the 40 million who visited last year. For tour boat owners, the absence is catastrophic.
If the virus doesn't go away by mid-next year, my family and friends in the tourism industry will be doomed.
This year, Thailand's economy is forecast to contract by 6%. That spells mass unemployment and a middle class drowning in debt. The debt crisis unfolds on the forecourt of the Siam Inter-Auto Auction House, where repossessed cars are sold for bargains. The government has borrowed a record $46 billion to float the economy. But there are fears it won't be enough to ease the pain ahead, with Thais unlikely to get a vaccine until well into next year.
Auctioning is a good economic indicator. If many people turn up selling cars due to bad debt, it shows that the economy is bad.
The kingdom is also locked in a political crisis. A youth-led peaceful protest movement is calling for the government to resign and a new constitution to be written to end the army's influence in politics. Crucially, there also one reform of the once untouchable monarchy, one of the richest anywhere in the world. They use rallies, satire, and social media to attack the old guard. Authorities have hit back with water cannons, riot police, and criminal charges under a strict royal defamation law that carries up to 15 years in jail per conviction. Protest leader Attapon Buapat is among 36 charged with insulting the monarchy, but he says the legal crackdown is only adding fuel to the protesters' fire.
The law might just be the last weapon that the establishment has to silence those who are trying to speak the truth. But the cat's already out of the bag. There's nothing you can do about it anymore.
The country, however, is split. Royalists say the monarchy must not be dragged into calls for reform. King Maha Wishiralongkorn is at the top of the Thai power structure. He holds the loyalty of the army, tycoons, and many older conservatives. Royalist campaigners file complaints of royal defamation with the police.
The Thai monarchy is like a big tree that's been providing shade for a long time to the Thai people. They have no right to cut down our tree.
A bitterly divided country. With an economy in free fall, Thailand is bracing for more trouble ahead. Wichitra Rundi for VOA News, Bangkok.
There is no current evidence that dogs can be infected. Hand washing after contact with all animals is recommended. This protects against other bacteria, such as E. coli and Salmonella, that can pass between animals and humans. For more information, visit www.who.int or www.cdc.gov.
You're listening to VOA Asia. 3D tours, drones, Hollywood-style videos. The global coronavirus pandemic and sheltering in place have not halted real estate sales. That's thanks to the help of high-end technology. Deanna Mitchell reports.
During the recent shelter-in-place rules, the real estate industry almost came to a screeching halt. But realtors in the San Francisco Bay Area quickly amped up their usage of the latest technology.
Come on, heading down the hall, I want to show you this bathroom.
We've had to change the way we work, the way we meet with clients, the way we sell real estate.
Usually realtors hold open houses for interested parties to walk through the property. But that is not currently allowed due to COVID-19 in the San Francisco region. So many realtors, like Forrest, have turned to technology to provide a virtual tour of the houses.
Zoom calls, FaceTime, Instagram Live, Facebook Live, video tours.
Some companies, like Blue Sky Films, use Hollywood techniques like gimbals and drones to create cinematic videos. Then they say they promote them using cutting-edge software algorithms and artificial intelligence to drive traffic to realtors' listings.
We use a platform that has artificial intelligence and also algorithmic functions, and it basically does A/B testing on steroids for the client's real estate listing.
Another company, Aerial Canvas, incorporates 360-degree cameras that create a 3D experience, allowing viewers to virtually tour the home, room by room.
And this is something that real estate agents have been doing a lot of because of coronavirus, is they'll get the 3D scan done by us, and then they'll do basically like a virtual open house.
And all of this innovation is working. Agents say they are selling some homes to clients who haven't stepped foot on the property.
Because of the technology that we've been able to implement in our business, it allows international buyers to make a more sound decision when they're searching for a property.
It's one way that technology is helping to keep the economy moving. For VOA News, Dina Mitchell, Oakland, California.
Even before the Netflix hit The Queen's Gambit aired on television, COVID had sparked more interest in the game of chess. In this piece narrated by Anna Rice, Elena Wolf talks about the game with Russian grandmaster Garry Kasparov.
Start your clock.
Every second and a half, someone in America asks Google how to play chess. The online portal chess.com has registered 28 million players, and Amazon is apologizing to clients because many chess sets ordered online won't be available in time for Christmas. The meteoric rise in the popularity of this ancient battle royale has a lot to do with the popularity of The Queen's Gambit, a hit Netflix show about the rise of a troubled chess prodigy.
It's an amazing show. It was super fun. That's what drew me to this, because I just finished watching it last night.
This is the biggest thing since 50 years. Fischer against the Russians in Reykjavik. The last time this country saw this madness, or what we call chess fever.
Americans have always had a complex relationship with chess, in part because it was one small battlefield of the Cold War between Russia and the United States. In 1972, the American Bobby Fischer won a game dubbed the Game of the Century when he beat the Soviet chess champion Boris Spassky. The Netflix show The Queen's Gambit is something of a retelling of that story. It focuses on an orphaned girl from Kentucky who beats her own demons and an unbeatable Soviet grandmaster in a game that transcends the decades-long conflict between the two great superpowers.
The antagonists, the Soviet chess champions, are depicted very warmly. There's no extra conflict added to the show about the Cold War, about fighting. There's no mean-spiritedness.
World chess champion Garry Kasparov was supposed to play the Soviet grandmaster Borgov in the show, but instead, he choreographed all the games in the show. He says the games are all real. Kasparov controlled every single one of them.
It was a question of prestige for me. I knew that my colleagues would be watching the show very closely, watching every game, and I promised myself that they wouldn't have anything to criticize, that each game would be perfect.
Even the chess figures the orphan Beth Harmon conjures on her ceiling are not just the show's invention.
In reality, chess players, when they think about chess, even during a game, oftentimes there are chess players who actually literally look up at the ceiling and are calculating variations.
American-Hungarian Susan Polgar became a grandmaster at the age of 15.
I was never involved with alcohol or drugs or lived a lifestyle as Beth Harmon, but I, of course, have been told a lot worse thing, and including sexual harassment and including physical intimidation. But, you know, verbal abuse was just an everyday thing, you know, that girls can't play chess, you know, girls don't belong in chess, go play with dolls, not with chess. Chess is for guys. Women are not as smart as guys.
The show, however, focuses on the idea that the game of chess is humane and eternal, and even in the middle of the Cold War, there's room for warm embraces.
The last scene in the show, she goes to the boulevard where men are playing chess.
Lisa Harmon.
Over 50 movies have been made about chess, but not many manage to make the game look so human and warm and fun. For Elena Wolf in Florida, Anna Rice, VOA News.
We're glad you joined us for today's VOA Asia. Come back again tomorrow, and you can continue online. We're on Facebook at VOA Asia, as well as Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. And you can find our full-length 25-minute programs on our website. That's voanews.com. We thank our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, and Keith Lane. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a terrific day ahead. Be safe. Be well.